Well, good afternoon. My name is Hunter Roberts. I am the Assistant Energy Director for the State of South Dakota and the Interim Executive Director of the South Dakota Energy Infrastructure Authority. I would say my task is to help achieve South Dakota's goal, Governor Rounds' goal, of being a net energy exporter by 2010. We've been very successful in our ethanol industry. We already are a substantial exporter of ethanol. We're working on developing our biodiesel industry and our wind industry. Obviously, renewables is a huge market today, and South Dakota has a lot of capacity for renewables. I serve as Interim Executive Director of the South Dakota Energy Infrastructure Authority, the SDEIA. In 2005, the South Dakota Energy Infrastructure Authority, or here's a brief presentation overview of what I'll talk about, the SDEIA, brief summary of legislative intent and background, the SDEIA reports, the current South Dakota Energy Infrastructure Authority wind power report, scope and findings, and the current and future of wind energy development in South Dakota, as I see it, I guess, or as I hope to see it. The SDEIA was created in 2005 to diversify and expand the state's economy by developing in South Dakota the energy production facilities and the energy transmission facilities necessary to produce and transport energy to markets within the state and outside of the state. Obviously, that's a broad task. So we've just narrowed it down to electricity and transmission, which is plenty of a task by itself. The South Dakota Energy Infrastructure Authority does have $1 billion in bonding authority for transmission projects, of course, subject to the South Dakota Legislature's approval. We have prepared 3 annual reports to the South Dakota Legislature, our congressional delegation, and the governor. And we do or can provide technical assistance and information to all parties. Our current board members, 3 of them are here. I'll just talk about them. Mike Trikoski, our chairman, he will be moderating tomorrow. Mike Held from South Dakota Farm Bureau, and Dr. Mike Ropp from SDSU. Our first 2 energy reports were more on the energy industry in general. They pointed out some opportunities that South Dakota has and compared to other states. We have available land and water. We have a good business and labor climate and supportive government policy and generally favorable regulatory process. Some challenges is finding customers for electric energy production for in-state and out and export. We're in the process of publishing a South Dakota wind power report that will be coming out December 1st. The scope of that, we've interviewed 24 utility industries, 24 different entities. Those range from utility industries to wind developers to MISO and Western and the federal government, i.e. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Some of the challenges that report found is, once again, that we have a very small market in South Dakota, right in the 2,000 megawatt load range. So if we want large amounts of wind energy, we need to export it, which leads to transmission being an issue. Another problem is the MISO queue issue. There's over 30,000 megawatts of wind in the MISO queue system right now, and it's only 110,000 megawatt system. So that's a large amount of load waiting to go through the process. Another issue is the MISO Western Basin seams issue, pancaking rates, as Mr. Olson from MISO spoke about earlier, and the need for the federal production tax credit. Wind energy in the past has been a boom and bust cycle. whenever wind energy, whenever the federal tax credit's extended, then wind does well. When it doesn't, it slows substantially. So that would lead to economic concerns because obviously wind is, much wind is dependent on the federal production tax credit. Opportunities in South Dakota, current transmission projects. We have the XL project from Sioux Falls, the pending Big Stone 2 project that would take potentially 800 to 1,000 megawatts of wind capacity to load in Minnesota and throughout the area. And the CapEx Brooking project. The Big Stone 2 project and the CapEx project, I think, are slated for the 2012 time frame. So we're a ways away. Opportunities, we're willing to work with other states. We need regional transmission planning that includes not only the wind developers, not only the policy folks, but includes the utility companies and the customers who are going to need this wind energy in the future. And South Dakota does have a great wind energy resource. As the map shows, there is a lot of potential there. Lieutenant Governor Dugard said that we are the fourth windiest state in the nation. I would argue with him and say that we have potential to be number one. Of course, that number is always changing. Here's some current and pending projects in South Dakota. As you can see, there's a lot of megawatts up there of potential and pending projects, but I think a lot of them are waiting for customers, for transmission to get to their customers. So that's a huge issue. In 2007, earlier this year, we had 44 megawatts of wind power. In the next month, we're going to have 187 megawatts. So we've over quadrupled our capacity in less than a year. So the potential's there to greatly expand our wind power. South Dakota's contribution to 20% wind. Great opportunity. We have the wind, but there's going to be some tough questions that need to be answered. Obviously, transmission and cost is the roadblock. Billions of dollars will need to be spent for this. There's billions of dollars of opportunity out there to be captured, but there's billions of dollars of opportunity cost that will need to be taken before we get there. This will not be an overnight solution, and it will take years of siting and building of transmission, which I'm looking forward to getting into. What is South Dakota doing? We're supporting the South Dakota Energy Infrastructure Authority. We have changed our laws to make South Dakota wind energy competitive. We've engaged in the MISO Western Basin Seams issue. We're supportive of a joint agreement that works for both parties. We're engaged in the MISO Q process, and we're supportive of extension of the federal production tax credit. Beginning stages of looking into multi-state transmission projects. Mike Bohl, I'm hoping to have future conversations with him. Recently, with the Midwestern Governors Association, signed a compact to work on developing clean energy corridors, so low carbon, hopefully renewable wind energy that would go to load east of us. South Dakota is looking for realistic solutions to these complex issues. These issues do not stop at the border. I wish they did, but we can build our transmission lines and be holding our plug, but there's nothing to plug into when we get to the border. So this is a regional issue that we all need to work on. To address these challenges, it will take many of the people in this room and many of the people out of this room. But I think together we can overcome these issues and make these challenges and opportunities. I look forward to working with you all in the future, and a future of greatly expanding wind energy in South Dakota. Thank you, and I look forward to your questions.
Thank you. As the only turbine manufacturer and developer who's on the agenda for these 2 days, my task, as I understand it, is to talk a little bit about an industry perspective, how the wind industry sees its future going forward, and what the implications are for transmission. What I'd like to do is leave you with three very simple thoughts. The wind industry in the U.S. is currently undergoing major changes, which are reshaping traditional roles, creating opportunities for new participants, and changing the scope and character of government regulation. These changes are all leading to a much larger and much more robust wind industry. But the industry also is strewn with issues and obstacles, some of which may resist resolution more stubbornly than is commonly assumed today. I want to talk about a few of those this afternoon. And then leave with you a thought that the most important change which is emerging from the industry is a change in scale. We are making a transition right now from projects that were sort of in the 50 to 100 to 200 megawatt range now to projects in the gigawatt scale range. And those really are a function of both where the industry is going and the constraints that it's facing. So let's start for a moment by talking about where all this demand is coming from. Worldwide right now, we're seeing growth in the wind industry of over 9% compounded annually. It's very impressive growth. In the U.S., of course, this is all driven by state policy, renewable portfolio standards, renewable energy standards. What we have right now in place represents somewhere in the neighborhood of probably about 70,000 megawatts. Currently in the country, we have an installed capacity of about 14,000. But this, of course, is a work in progress. The number of states are considering who don't have RESs are considering those. Some of them that do have them are considering of increasing those. This right here is worth probably another 40,000 megawatts of demand. Of course, as a turbine supplier, we like to translate those energy numbers into capacity numbers. What is the market for equipment going forward? If we went to a national standard, you all have seen many of these type of numbers, depending on what the standard would be, and more importantly, where that capacity is built, the quality of the wind that it's built in, the type of machines that it's built with, we could see what we have right now double, or maybe even more. What about here in the Midwest? If every state here in the Midwest were to take a look at renewable energy standards sort of with the same amount of enthusiasm that Minnesota does, we could see somewhere in excess of 60,000 megawatts just here in the Midwest states. So where's all this wind going to come from? As we know, in the U.S., we have plentiful wind. There's enough wind resource in this country to power the entire country twice. Just here in the Midwest, the area that's oftentimes known as the Buffalo Ridge, most of North and South Dakota, southwestern Minnesota, northwestern Iowa, this area right here is enough to power the entire country just by itself. So what happens? Let's overlay those two ideas. Where is the market for the power? And where is the wind resource? And a very clear picture begins to emerge. You know, there's another way to take a look at this, and we don't take a look at legislative mandates, but we take a look at where the dollars are. This is the investor-owned utilities, about 80% of the dollars spent on utilities around the country. If we take a look at this now, not from legislative mandates, but in terms of consumer welfare, what could we do? No matter sort of how you look at these two views, either from a standpoint of mandates or a standpoint of consumer welfare, a very clear conclusion, a very inescapable conclusion emerges. And that conclusion is this. If you love wind energy, you're going to have to at least like transmission. So what's the problem here? The market's growing faster than we can keep up with it. Wind is a good value in today's energy marketplace. There's no carbon nightmares to keep you up at night. What could possibly be the problem? And there are a couple, all of which come back in one way or another to unstable government policy. The most important, of course, is the production tax credits, 2 cents a kilowatt hour, for every kilowatt hour that's generated. The problem with the PTC is not that it's not helpful. The problem is that it seems to come and go with the whims of Congress. It's a very fickle subsidy. It left in 2002, came back in 2001, disappeared again in 2002, came back in 2003, and so on. You can see by this graphic the effect that this has on the industry as that PTC continues to disappear. The current one we have right now, incidentally, if it's not renewed, expires in 13 months, 2 days, and about 10 hours. Here's the clearest picture of how to do government policy and how not to do government policy for the wind industry. In the back is the European example, long time horizons, stable policy. Ours is quite the contrary. And I don't mean to be flippant about this here. This is deadly serious. As the PTC comes and goes, so do a lot of jobs, so does industry infrastructure. It's a boom and bust cycle, which is very, very harmful to the industry. Keep in mind that the electric utility industry is one of the world's most capital-intensive industries, one which requires almost $5 of assets for every dollar of annual revenues. We can't make investment decisions when we have three-year capital cycles. Transmission interconnect. You've heard a lot about it already. You're going to hear a lot more about it. I should apologize that this slide violates the first law of PowerPoint, which is no more than four sentences or 30 words on a slide. But I can sort of distill this down to a very simple thought, which is the transmission interconnect process today is broken, and it needs to be fixed. There are a lot of very serious people doing a lot of very serious work addressing the problems that we're seeing right now, and it would behoove all of us to support those efforts. Supply chain. You know, the dirty little secret in the wind industry is that not only do we not have enough turbines for today's market, that supply chain expands only very slowly, and it expands particularly slowly here in the U.S., where companies are unwilling to make large capital investments in plant and equipment because of the boom-bust cycle that has characterized it in the future, in the past. If we have any hope of achieving the type of numbers that we see on a lot of these graphics, it's going to take policies which encourage capital investment in the type of things that we need to be able to build the turbines. So where does that leave us? Large market. We have some problems in getting the power to market. I would suggest to you that we are right now at a transitionary moment in the wind industry. You know, how have we done this historically? You know, historically, we're always looking for sort of that key overlap. You're looking for good wind, you're looking for a market for the power, and then the transmission to get it from here to there. And we've sort of sought out small pockets within the existing system where we can do that. You find 50 megawatts of transmission capacity here and 200 megawatts of capacity there, and you build a wind farm. But that model is ending. It's ending because we've gone through it not once, not twice, but three, four, five times, and so have a dozen other developers. And those opportunities now are very few and far between. Instead of looking for pockets of transmission and trying to build plants there, where the industry moving today is to build larger facilities and then build the transmission themselves. Rather than looking for it within the existing grid, we'll build it ourselves. And in order to do that, it requires scale. We can't afford to spread a $1 billion transmission project out over 200 megawatts. It needs to be much larger. And this is really the fundamental driving force right now in the industry, is how do we get to the scale that allows us to build the transmission rather than working within the existing system. There are a few other things which are changing. Utility companies are looking at wind differently than they looked at it in the past. There has always been what I call a parochialism for in-state wind, which is Minnesota wind for Minnesota customers and Iowa wind for Iowa customers. And utilities are beginning to look at this a little bit differently now, saying, no, what we really care about What we really need is a long-term vision in a way to make sure that we ensure that we are buying the lowest cost renewables first and then working our way back towards the more expensive renewables. So the three biggest issues, well, this one's kind of obvious, transmission. What do we need from the wind industry? Well, we need a few things from the folks in this group. The first is, as I mentioned, we need reform of the LGIA process. We need to have some type of meaningful resolution of the seams issues that you've heard about in order that both the electrons as well as the dollars begin to flow in a more rational way. And finally, we could use some help with transmission corridor development. This is the biggest stumbling block for us right now. I want to be careful to say that this is not, when I talk about the need for corridors, this is not some euphemism or some clever way to talk about subsidies. We don't need subsidies. There's plenty of money out there from both the utilities and private industry to build the transmission facilities. Our biggest stumbling block is the pathway to get from here to there. With that, thank you very much for your kind attention.
One or two questions for these guys? One or two? Yep.
Mr. Hunter, when you say that you've engaged in MISO issues, what does that mean?
When you say you've engaged in MISO issues, what does that mean, Mr. Hunter?
I guess from my perspective, I have had several conversations with the MISO folks and the WAPA folks. And Governor Rounds participated in a joint letter with six other governors from the Midwest to address the MISO issue, or the Q issue. And we're going to continue to evaluate the situation. I think our next conference call is scheduled for late January, and we're hoping for some sort of indication of what's happening at that point.
Any milestones, suggested accomplishments?
Yes, they do have some very good discussions going on. MISO does an open access stakeholder process, so it doesn't move as quickly as I would like, but that's the way the system works. And I think they've really ramped up. Originally it was like, I might be out of my knowledge base here, it was a once a month or once every 2 month meeting, and now it's a every other week meeting that they're working on this issue.
So it's a high priority.
Absolutely.
All right, one more question. Yep, come on up, please.
Hi, my name is Bruce Poole, and up until about a year ago, when I retired, I was with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and I helped write the large generator interconnection agreement that you say we had so much problems. And I probably understand that because it was written for large natural gas-fired generators, not wind. And I guess I'd just like to know more about what you consider the problems.
Yeah, there's a couple problems, not the least of which is that there are so many requests right now in the queue that the ISOs and the RTOs can't keep up with them. That has a couple reasons. One is that there is just a lot of enthusiasm for wind right now, and we, as well as all the other developers, are trying to stake out positions for developing projects in the future. More fundamentally, however, the structure, the way it exists right now, encourages or in some cases encourages developers from coming in with multiple requests at multiple points at multiple times as a way to game the system and to try to gain competitive advantage within that queue process. And the result of that is it's just gummed up. If you take a look today at how long it would take from the day you put in interconnect request to when you'd actually sign an interconnection agreement, we've gone from what was originally conceived of as a process which should take months now to one which is taking years. That's the first problem. The second problem I would point to is that that the process sort of serves two masters. In one hand, it's an interconnect, and another hand, it's the transmission service. And in my mind, we should separate those two processes out, the interconnect from the transmission service.
All right. Well, I want to thank you, too, for talking with us and giving us your perspective.